Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. On the front page, we begin with Medicaid funding crisis looms. Feds cut off billions, state must cover loss, by Peter Hancock with Capital News, Illinois. A multi-billion dollar budget crisis will hit the state's Medicaid program in the next few years unless state lawmakers and Governor J.B. Pritzker act to prevent it, budget analysts both inside and outside state government warn. The crisis comes from changes in federal Medicaid policy that were enacted last year as part of President Donald Trump's sweeping domestic policy agenda, known officially as H.R. 1 or the, quote, One Big Beautiful Bill Act, unquote, which, among many other things, slashes one of the main funding tools many states have used for four decades to fund their share of the cost of Medicaid. By the time you're a few years in, you're looking at a $4, $5, or $6 billion a year hit, and that's material, Paula Worthington, a researcher with the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, said during a recent interview. Worthington is a co-author of a recent IGPA report that describes the upcoming changes in Medicaid funding as one of the most serious long-term fiscal challenges facing Illinois. The funding tools at issue are known as provider taxes. Those are special taxes that states levy on hospitals, nursing homes, private insurance plans, known as managed care organizations or MCOs, and other kinds of health care providers. States levy those taxes, usually on a per-patient or per-bed basis, and put the money into a fund that is used to draw down federal matching funds. The combination of state and federal funds is then used to either to enhance Medicaid reimbursement rates or to make direct payments to hospitals and nursing homes that serve large numbers of Medicaid patients to help sustain those facilities financially. When Medicaid was first established in 1965, it was a relatively modest program that provided health care benefits to people who already qualified for other kinds of public assistance, with costs split between the federal government and the states. As both the size and cost of the program grew, however, states began looking for new ways to pay for their share of the cost outside of their general revenues. Provider taxes emerged in the mid-1980s as one such mechanism. By the mid-1990s, Congress began putting controls on state-levied provider taxes. Those included rules that they be broad-based and uniform, meaning they had to apply evenly across an entire class of health care providers and not just those that served the Medicaid patients. The idea was that states were prohibited from holding providers harmless by assuring them they would get all their money back and then some once the federal matching funds were drawn down. But the federal rules also included a safe harbor provision. States could avoid having to comply with the hold harmless prohibition as long as their taxes amounted to no more than 6% of net patient revenue. That rule has effectively served as a cap on what states can levy in the form of a provider tax, but that cap is about to be cut nearly in half. Under a provision of H.R. 1, a provision that only applies to states like Illinois that expanded Medicaid eligibility under the Affordable Care Act, that 6% cap will gradually be cut starting in fiscal year 2028 until it reaches 3.5% in fiscal year 2032. In fiscal year 2025, according to the Department of Health Care and Family Services, Illinois spent a total of $33.7 billion through its Medicaid program, making it one of the single largest categories of expenditures in state government. Of that total, $20.9 billion, or 62%, was federal money, while the remaining $12.8 billion came from state funds, including both general revenue and provider taxes. The IGPA reported that provider taxes in fiscal year 2025 amounted to $4.7 billion, or about 37% of all the state funds that were spent on Medicaid. The bulk of that money, according to DHFS, came from two provider taxes, those on hospitals and MCOs. A recent report by the nonpartisan health policy research organization, KFF, points out that Illinois stands to lose more than any other state when the reductions take effect because it is the only state whose hospital and MCO assessments are both above the 3.5% threshold. The report by IGPA estimates that when the first reduction takes effect in fiscal year 2028, revenues from those two assessments alone will fall $239 million. And depending on how much healthcare prices and Medicaid usage grows over the next 5 years, a total reductions from those two sources could range from $1.25 billion to $2 billion by fiscal year 2033. But remember, that's just the state money, Worthington said. That is not taking into account the matching funds. Assuming the state continues to receive an average of 62% federal match rate, the total impact to Illinois by fiscal year 2033 would be between $3.3 and $5.3 billion a year. That estimate aligns with a separate estimate from the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, which reported in October that if the state does not make up for the reduced provider taxes through some other appropriation, quote, the gross amount of lost funding to the state and its Medicaid program will total over $4.5 billion annually by fiscal year 2031 when factoring the lost federal match, close quote. The impending limits on Medicaid provider taxes will pose a significant challenge for lawmakers who will either have to find some other way to pay the state's share of the cost or adjust the program to fit within the new fiscal constraints. But because the federal changes do not take effect for another year, it is possible lawmakers will not feel pressure to take immediate action in this upcoming legislative session. In more local news items, we have Illinois County Fair Queen crowned in Effingham. Krista Phillips' list of summer royal activities has gotten a bit more hectic. Phillips, the reigning Miss Effingham County Fair, was chosen Sunday from a field of 75 contestants as the 68th Miss Illinois County Fair Queen. Her summer now will be spent emphasizing the importance of agriculture and county fairs while traveling to about 30 county fairs and serving as the official hostess of the Illinois State Fair in Springfield and the DuQuoin State Fair in DuQuoin. Royal service has become something of a family tradition. Her two older sisters were past Effingham County Fair Queen winners as well. Both competed at the state level and both sisters had been second runner-up for Miss Illinois County Fair Queen. I saw behind the scenes of Queen competition and becoming Miss Illinois County Fair Queen became a dream for me, said Phillips, 21, the daughter of Glenn and Jenny Phillips. She described the moment her name was announced as Miss Illinois County Fair Queen as surreal. I didn't think my name would even be called, she said. This is just such a blessing. Phillips will graduate from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign in May with a bachelor's degree in business management and marketing. She plans to return to the Effingham area to pursue her dream of opening a small business and giving back to the community. The top 16 finalists were McCain, Cass, Williamson County, Bella Evans, Morgan County, Elena Ford, Western Illinois Fair, Chloe Martin, Edgar County, Krista Phillips from Effingham County, Sierra Compton, Pena Tri-County, Cadence Smith of Wayne County, Riley McDermott of Monroe County, Ruby Mulvaney, Ogle County, Lydia Repsher, Christian County, Malia Killey, Warren County, Alyssa Wicks from Macon County, Allison Warman of Shelby County, Ray Stuckey of Iroquois County, Avery Myers of Fayette County, and Laney York from White County. In Normal, the Heartland Theater Company is offering an 8-session directing workshop starting in February. The workshop will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesdays and Fridays at Heartland Theater at 1110 Douglas Street in Normal. Those dates include February 25 and 27 and March 4, 6, 11, 13, 18, and 20. Classes will be led by Don Lacasse, an emeritus professor of theater from Illinois State University, with more than four decades of teaching and directing experience. He and Courtney Monieri will teach participants to apply principles of stage direction to the rehearsal process. No previous acting or directing experience is required to participate. Classes will be $150 and registration is open through February 14th at heartlandtheater.org/playwriting. The workshop is open to ages 16 and up and class size is limited. In Gridley, Eastern Illinois Food Bank will distribute free groceries next month to area families facing food insecurity in McLean, Livingston, and Woodford counties. The Woodford County distribution will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 10th at the American Legion at 104 East Parkside Drive in Washburn. The Livingston County distribution will be from 11:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. February 10th at the Fairbury Community Food Pantry. Stop. I'm going to read that again because there was a glitch in the programming. The Livingston County distribution will be from 11:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. February 10th at the Fairbury Community Food Pantry at 510 East Oak Street. And the McLean County distributions will be from 10:15 to 11:15 a.m. on Monday, February 23rd at Christ Community Church at 406 West 7th Street in Gridley, and 12:45 and 1:45 p.m. February 23rd at Allen Township Library at 116 West Main Street in Stanford. An additional distribution has also been added in January for McLean County, scheduled from 3 to 4 p.m. January 29th at Bright Point, 403 South State Street in Bloomington. Income guidelines will apply. Next, I have Drew Zimmerman writing, Illinois expands Medicaid reentry effort to connect inmates with care. Since its launch in 1965, Medicaid has been prohibited from covering health care services for incarcerated individuals, which has put the financial burden on the state and counties to cover correctional health care costs. Although Medicaid is suspended during incarceration, individuals can apply for medical benefits in anticipation of their release date. But even when they are released from jail, it's difficult for individuals to be reconnected to Medicaid or other insurance coverage to treat any potential behavioral health conditions. In 2023, California became the first state authorized to use federal Medicaid dollars for select health care services in its jails. Prisons and juvenile correctional facilities through the Medicaid reentry section at 1115 demonstration waiver. I'm sorry, that it did not make sense. Authorized to use federal Medicaid dollars for select health care services in its jails, prisons, and juvenile correctional facilities through the Medicaid reentry section demonstration waiver. This allows eligible detainees with a documented health care need, such as a chronic mental illness or a substance abuse disorder, to be connected to specific services up to 90 days prior to their release. In July 2024, Illinois was one of five states to be granted a five-year extension of the Medicaid reentry section 115 demonstration waiver, which would help to secure additional Medicaid resources for treating substance abuse and other health problems. With the extension, Illinois is attempting to roll out a pilot initiative that would automatically enroll Medicaid-eligible inmates of the Cook County Jail into the County Care Health Plan up to 90 days prior to their release date. The proposed program provides for community reintegration services, like case management and transition planning, up to 90 days before an inmate's release. Judith Ruiz Branch, a former senior public service administrator with the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, said that although the pilot program would only apply to Cook County Jail detainees at first, the intent would be to implement the community reintegration benefits for individuals in other counties who are leaving carceral settings. While the specific financial impact of expanding Medicaid coverage for inmates is yet to be determined, ensuring that individuals in carceral settings have chronic conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, and mental illness under control at discharge and are discharged with a supply of medications and a plan for ongoing care in the community will help to avoid costly emergency department visits and inpatient hospitalizations, Ruiz Branch wrote. Although the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services issued a memo rescinding previous health-related social needs guidance, DHFS Media Relations Officer Melissa Kula said this does not negate the existing approval of the state's 1115 waiver. At this time, HFS will continue operational planning related to the 1115 waiver and will monitor any developments closely, she said. From the Veterans Corner, we have American Legion Post 635 and Evergreen Cemetery in Bloomington will conduct a ceremony to commemorate the 83rd anniversary of the World War II heroism of the four chaplains of the U.S. Army. The story of their selfless devotion to their fellow soldiers and their willingness to sacrifice themselves were an inspiration to the entire free world at a time in early 1943 when the outcome of World War II was still in grave doubt. The chaplains gave their life jackets to young soldiers who did not have life jackets after their transport ship, the USS Dorchester, was torpedoed in the North Atlantic. The ceremony will commence at 1 p.m. Tuesday, February 3rd, in the mausoleum near the entrance of Evergreen Cemetery. One of the chaplains, George Fox, attended Illinois Wesleyan University, and some of his relatives still reside in McLean County. The ceremony will have an opening prayer, a short speech, rifle salute, taps, bagpipe music, and a flyover, if weather permits. Come join us for this inspiring event. The public is invited to the ceremony, which will be held in the mausoleum in Evergreen Cemetery. If you are receiving a VA monetary benefit payment, beware the scammers are out there. The typical VA benefit overpayment scam usually will involve the use of fake VA letterheads and logos and spoofed phone numbers and caller IDs. The scammer will claim that you have received an overpayment of your benefit amount and now owe money to the VA. The scammer will use pressure tactics, demanding immediate payment for the overpayment directly to them through credit cards, Bitcoin, debit cards, money transfers, or gift cards. These pressure tactics should prompt you to suspect a scammer at work. Scammers may request personal information, such as login information of your VA accounts. Immediately, if you suspect a scammer may be afoot, contact your va.gov account online or call VA Debt Management at 1-800-827-0648. Either contact will identify if the VA is requesting any kind of overpayment. VA healthcare has in recent years been open to alternative processes to provide needed care for veterans outside normal medical treatment and medication protocols. VA is now offering Tai Chi via a video that will assist veterans who are feeling stressed through service-connected anxiety and depression, as well as everyday stresses. The VA claims that the Tai Chi Cloud Hands movement form uses slow, mindful and intentional movement to develop the back muscles, relax the neck and shoulders, and increase blood flow and the movement of chi or energy within the body. Sound kind of funky? Give it a try. Roger Currier, a recreation therapist and certified applied Tai Chi instructor from the James A. Haley VA Medical Center in Tampa, Florida, leads an 18-minute video practice of Cloud Hands Tai Chi. What have you got to lose, especially on those high-stress days we all have, where it seems like nothing is going to turn out all right? Learn more about Tai Chi as part of the VA Whole Health System by browsing hashtag Live Whole Health Archives. The VA research arm is conducting a study to compare the effectiveness of liver cancer diagnosis processes, magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI, versus ultrasound. This study hypothesizes that one of these two diagnostic tools currently in use will show an ability to identify liver cancer at an earlier stage of development. This earlier identification of the cancer should allow for more curative treatments and result in a reduction in related mortality. VA healthcare and research is at the cutting edge of discovering and developing improved treatment and care for veterans. The research results, however, are freely shared with non-VA providers. And the quote of the day, party or country, which is important and which is simply opportunistic? The political parties seem to have subverted the intentions of the First Amendment, freedom of the press, and diminished the press to political propaganda machines. News is now 24/7, not cyclical like when we used to have enough time to ponder what was reported and then make our own decisions as to which news we chose to believe. Now we can barely catch our breath before the next onslaught of political positions bombard us on the same subject. While I believe in the First Amendment, freedom of the press, no one seems to be held accountable when, quote, journalists, unquote, lie and or subvert the truth for purely ideological purposes. Come on, journalism. America deserves better than this. Quote, if partisanship makes us abandon intellectual honesty, if we oppose what our opponents say or do simply because they are the ones saying or doing it, we become mere political short sellers, hoping for bad news because it's good news for our ideological investment. This was said by Kurt Anderson. And the writer of the VA Corner is Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistance Commission. Anna Trofimuk and Drew Zimmerman have written a long, in-depth article about how inmates are dying in Illinois. This is a summary written by those two reporters, five takeaways, how inmates are dying in Illinois. County jail inmates across the region are suffering from preventable circumstances due to a lack of uniform health care standards and resources. Several have died before even stepping foot into a courtroom for their alleged crimes. An investigation by Lee Enterprises' public service journalism team and the Pantograph found dozens of cases of inmate neglect, ranging from being denied prescribed medications for underlying conditions to dying due to untreated withdrawal symptoms. Law enforcement and jail officials say they struggle to keep up with the demand of complex medical situations presented by an inherently difficult population to look after. They have to fill a substantial gap in services and end up having to find solutions for care jails were not meant to provide. Unlike prisons, which are primarily under the authority of the Illinois Department of Corrections, Illinois jails are overseen by county governments, specifically sheriff's offices. With varying populations, budgets, staffing levels, and community resources from county to county, it's difficult to deliver universal health care reform that would effectively benefit Illinois jails. Most Illinois jails contract with private health care providers to compensate for dwindling resources and high rates of staff turnover. While the approach is cost-effective, since third-party employees wouldn't be entitled to a county-funded pension, it comes with a slew slew of other problems. Providers must model their contracts based on size, budget, and other parameters of the county and correctional facility. Even if the same provider covers adjacent counties, contracts could stipulate different staffing levels or elective care. The lack of rehabilitation centers and education on opioid and drug addiction are contributing to the problem. Many sheriffs and law enforcement officials interviewed for this series referred to jails as revolving door of people with some of the most difficult to treat drug addictions and mental health concerns. Local and state representatives say there needs to be more funding for programs that would help provide resources to those suffering from addiction and serious mental health concerns. President Donald Trump's administration announced in March plans to pull back $477 million from Illinois that was to be used to both prevent infectious disease and treat mental health and substance abuse issues. As the country deals with a severe nursing shortage, jails are forced to compete for medical staff against hospitals, private practitioners, and other higher-paying employers. Although state and federal incentive programs do exist to place nurses in underserved areas or facilities, jails are often excluded from lists of eligible employers. Some officials are skeptical that the use of incentives can retain staff long-term. Because of an insufficient number of beds at state-operated mental health facilities, many detainees deemed unfit to stand trial or not guilty by reason of insanity wait far beyond the 60-day statutory deadline to be transferred to a proper facility for treatment. Most jails were not designed to provide long-term restorative care to these inmate populations. And without proper resources, inmates' mental health can deteriorate to a point worse than when they were first booked. Some reform advocates have likened the situation to warehousing the most vulnerable inmate populations. The full scope of this problem is unknown. There are not many studies, if any, that address jail deaths in the same way prison deaths are investigated. Although county jails are subject to an annual inspection by criminal justice specialists employed by IDOC, advocates say facilities are judged more on whether they have health care policies in place than whether they are properly enforced. Jails are regulated by IDOC, which conducts annual inspections based off of a lengthy checklist of items. However, there are very few standards that cover issues sheriffs, law enforcement officials, reform advocates, inmates, and their families highlighted throughout this series of reporting. And we'll finish up with caregiver burnout. Being the full-time caregiver of a loved one can be a tough job. If you have to learn a few tricks to give both the other person and yourself the care you deserve. I am currently the primary caretaker for a loved one in hospice. It's pretty much a 24/7 job. I want to be there for her, and I'm going to embrace every moment we have together, but the truth is I'm also tired. Daily morning runs to the doctor for injections, trying to find something she'll eat, cleaning up after her. I've become numb to most of it. Being woken at all hours has turned into just napping any chance I get. Getting up before 6 a.m. is not what I signed up for as a writer. The pressure of watching a loved one die and taking on the task of caring for that person really means that you are giving up a part of your life. You now come second, and while any seasoned caregiver will tell you to put on your own oxygen first, that rule often is overlooked. It is important to take a break. Take a moment to pretend you are somewhere else doing whatever suits your fancy. One of the ways I give myself a mini vacation is to imagine being in the south of France, drinking champagne and laughing. It also helps to be around other positive people, doing fun things like having dinner. You can ask others to come by and hang out so you don't have to leave your loved one. Friends can bring a little love and good energy into the home. Times like these make the process of being a caregiver much easier. Remember that you are doing an amazing thing here. You have given up much of your time to care for someone else who is almost ready to leave this life. It's a gift to both of you, but it's one that takes a lot of energy, so find ways to get the support you need to keep going. And with that, we conclude the reading of Part 1 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 20th, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with Part 2.